first thing, Senator, we'll just start off here. You've been part of the federal government now since 1997, if I'm not correct,
right,
when you were
right.
elected to the House of Representatives, right. first in the House, now in the Senate since 2010. And as the majority whip in Congress, and now you're a member of the Senate Appropriations Committee, the Senate Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee, the Senate Armed Services Committee, and the Senate Rules Committee. And did you think when you first ran for office that you would reach this point of influence in your career?
You know, I was particularly in the House, Mike. I had one of the better careers anybody's ever had in the House. When I had been there starting my very second term, Denny Hastert became the Speaker of the House, and I took his job in the leadership. And then not too long after that became the majority whip, faster in my congressional career than anybody in 80 years. That was a surprise to me and everybody else, and I hope it seemed logical to the people I got to work with after they saw the things we were able to do in trying to truly bring reform and common sense to Washington. But we seem to be on a path right now that's not the reform common sense path, and I'd like to see us get back there. You know, the Affordable Care Act, the President's health care plan, the law that really appears to be applying there is the law of unintended consequences. And then the other law that's not applying is the president just deciding what parts of that law are going to be enforced and what parts aren't going to be enforced. One of the things I'm working on right now is I've introduced a bill that's already passed the House that would allow members of Congress to actually have standing in court to take the administration to court when we think the president's not enforcing the law. And clearly the 36 or so postponements of the law in the president's health care plan would be cases where the president's not enforcing the law. Now, it's a law that I was never for. At the same time, I also believe that people will never fully understand what the problems with the president's health care plan are until the president's forced to play those cards. You know, I think the biggest enemy of Obamacare will be Obamacare. And only when people begin to get the notices that they're going to get, when people begin to see their insurance deductibles go up, assuming they can, if they can afford insurance, when people begin to see the impact on their local hospital or their local doctor, are people going to know that, wait a minute, this is what Roy Blunt's been talking about all the time. This is why this won't work and why we needed to do a handful of things to improve the best healthcare system in the world so that more people have access. But the government certainly didn't need to take over best healthcare system in the world for that to happen.
And if I may interject, one of the things I wanted to ask you is, with Congress so adamant about repealing or replacing ACA, what legislation would the GOP put in place to combat the ever-increasing healthcare costs in the nation?
Well, you know, actually, not only would we put it in place, but it's generally legislation that I introduced along with others in 2009, letting people, and what did we need to do to improve the system we had? We had a system where 85% of all the people that had insurance got insurance at work. 90% plus of them thought their insurance situation was really good and they liked what they had. So what do you do to get the other 15% to a point where they can be part of this system as well? A handful of things you could have done. Buying across state lines. Make it possible for people to buy insurance either anywhere in the country or in any neighboring state if you wanted to keep it at a regional kind of thing. But I would think anywhere in the country, buying across state lines, high-risk pools that work better than the high-risk pools that were working. You know, for those people who think that you can get insurance even after you're sick part of this law is a good thing. Frankly, it probably discourages people from getting insurance. But we could have expanded the high-risk pools where people who already had a pre-existing condition could get in something like the Missouri high-risk pool, and they'd pay a premium that was just slightly more than the premium everybody else was paying. And remember, they hadn't had insurance or they had lost the insurance they had. Expanding those high-risk pools. Medical liability reform would be another way to keep costs down. More use of health savings accounts. More ability of people to find an association that they could become part of. Small business health plans, so you'd have group insurance, but you'd find ways to become part of a bigger group than the group might be right here at the radio station. You know, maybe the radio station could buy insurance through the Missouri Broadcasters Association, where every radio station in Missouri had the option, if they wanted it, to be part of that group or some other. There were a handful of things you could have done, none of which were very complicated. I think I introduced 9 bills or so. None of them were longer than 75 pages, and they weren't dependent on each other to have positive impact on the system. That's clearly the course we should have taken. As people now see all the unintended consequences of part-time employment, because employers can't afford to give the insurance the government says they have to give, so they instead they don't let workers qualify for that insurance. They don't let them work the 30 hours that the law now says you'd have to work. All of those unintended consequences, rural hospitals in real trouble, people who can't keep the doctor that they liked. I could sit here the rest of this time and probably the rest of the day and tell you stories Missourians have told me about how this new system is not working for them nearly as well as the system we had last year was working.
Senator, with midterm elections just months away, how are you and the GOP feeling about the battle for the Senate as well as the House?
Well, I think the House is clearly going to maintain the conservative-Republican majority that they have now. And if I had to guess, I'd guess the odds are greater that the Republicans in the House will add 5 or 6 seats than that they would lose 5 or 6 seats. And everybody at this moment looking at this says the odds are better than 50-50 that Republicans will gain the net 6 seats that we would need to take the majority in the Senate. And if that happens, Mike, I think then the real challenge for my party, the real challenge for Republicans, is what do we do to send the message to American voters between then and the presidential election that this is the party that they not only would want to trust with foreign policy, but this is the party that's also going to have the common sense view of energy and agriculture and manufacturing and more private sector jobs that people can have the kind of take-home pay that they'd like to have for the future of them and their family.
Senator, another big issue here, of course, is the Supreme Court's future ruling. It is pending. But they heard the arguments this week on the Hobby Lobby lawsuit, for lack of a better term. Can you comment on that?
Well, I can. You know, I had legislation when this HHS, the Health and Human Services rule, came out that said, here's what you have to do. Here's what your insurance policy has to look like. And it was clear from the beginning of those rules that for many people, their faith would actually be an impediment to being part of the healthcare procedures that the government says you now would have to pay for as an employer. And this Hobby Lobby case, it's actually the Hobby Lobby case, and there's a Mennonite kitchen cabinet shop in Pennsylvania that's also joined in this case, where both are closely held family corporations. They both have a long-time history that not even the government challenged of sincerity in their religious beliefs. You know, Hobby Lobby's 500 locations around the country. There, every one of them are closed on Sunday. Every one of them close earlier in the week than most of their competing businesses. I think nobody's open later than 8 o'clock at those stores. Every one of them in their local newspaper at holiday time takes out a faith-based ad about the scriptures and their sense of why this holiday is important. Can the government make you do something that your faith says you shouldn't do without an overriding public interest? Should the government try to figure out a way to accommodate your faith? That's what this case will decide. I think the court will rule for Hobby Lobby, just like my legislation would have not made this case wouldn't have made this case have to happen at all, because it said if you had strongly held religious and moral beliefs that you wouldn't have to do everything. And by the way, Mike, the legislation I proposed also said, this couldn't be just to save money, because if you didn't do what the government said you had to do, the government actually could let you propose other things you'd rather do that were equally financially impactful on you. So you'd want to offer mental health coverage or some kind of coverage that wasn't required. This was never about money, and it was never about women's health, or it was about whether or not the government can violate the first freedom in the First Amendment in the first sentence to the Bill of Rights. And what's that first freedom? Freedom of religion, which President Jefferson said should be the freedom we hold most dear of all our freedoms. That if the government can tell you what to believe, or suggest you can only believe it in the church house on Sunday or the temple or the mosque and you can't practice it during the week, we've given up one of the fundamental identities of who we are as a country.
Well, Senator, an often repeated mantra of the Republican Party and conservatives is get government out of my life. However, some critics are saying by restricting women's access to contraception and abortion, as well as the denial of secular marriage to same-sex couples, doesn't that come off as duplicitous? Because that's absolutely government interjecting in the lives of American citizens.
No, I think actually just the opposite. I think that when you tell people what they have to do, or you have a penalty that is so severe that you make people choose between their business and their faith, where you'd have to give up your business to keep your faith or give up your faith to keep your business, that's a real problem. And the let's take the Hobby Lobby case. So if you don't offer any insurance at all under the president's health care bill, if you don't offer any coverage at all, your penalty is $2,000 per employee per year. If you don't offer exactly the coverage that the all-knowing federal government says you have to offer, your penalty is $36,500 per employee for a year. $2,000 per employee if you don't do anything, $36,000, $500 if you don't do exactly what the government says you're supposed to do. That's a government that's totally out of control. And by the way, nobody would say that your employee couldn't pursue these things on their own, just you don't have to be part of it. And these are not expensive procedures. Plan B, the morning after pill, is available now on the counter. There's not even an age restriction. Hobby Lobby pays twice minimum wage for their full-time employees that are not seasonal. They start at $14 an hour. You have to work there maybe half a day, one day, to have made more than enough to do any of the things that the company doesn't want to pay for.
Well, Senator, we thank you for your time. We know it's running out here. You have to get going. You're a very busy man. We know that. But one more question.
Yep.
Do you think the Royals have a realistic chance of ever beating the Cardinals in the World Series again?
Well, I was that was the only World Series that I've gone to. I think I went to every game in that World Series. And Game 6, I wouldn't have thought the Royals had a realistic chance of beating the Cardinals that year. But they went right on and won Game 6 in a little bit of a controversy and went on to win Game 7. You know, we had a great Missouri sports year last year. Who would have thought the Kansas City Chiefs would have done what they have done, what the University of Missouri would have done in the SEC in football? Let's not talk about basketball. And the Cardinals look like they're on the way. Both Cardinals and Royals are getting some pretty good preseason talk about what their teams are going to look like.
I had to do that one for our morning man in KMZU, Don Emus. He says you're a Cardinals fan. Is that true?
Well, that is true. But I'm also a Royals fan if they're not playing the Cardinals.
There you
we
go.
Live in in Springfield, we live about a block and a half from the AA Cardinals, the Springfield Cardinals. And so not only do I get to see the Cardinals and the Royals play occasionally, but I get to see a little minor league baseball, and I can walk there from my house.
Senator Roy Blunt, thank you for your
time.
Good
to be with you, Mike.